Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Don't forget, our election night coverage begins at 7 o'clock tomorrow night as the polls close in Virginia, Indiana, and most of Florida. I'll be here with Andrea Bernstein, Amy Eddings, and the whole NPR election unit team will join us here on AM 820 and 93.9 FM. And you can blog along with us tomorrow night at electioncompanion.org. It all begins at 7 p.m. Now, both the Obama and McCain campaigns have deployed armies of lawyers around the country, especially to swing states, to ward off election fraud and voter intimidation. Millions of people have already cast their ballots in early voting states. As many as half of all voters in Colorado will already have voted by the time it's election day, quote unquote. And because there's more interest and excitement in this year's election, it's not surprising that voter suppression efforts are reported to be ramping up as well. And with early reports of faulty voting machines and lawsuits filed in several states already, can we expect lots of chaos and contested ballot counts tomorrow? Will we be going until December 13th or so, like they did in 2000 with Bush versus Gore? Joining us now is Richard Hassan, law professor at the Loyola Law School and author of the Election Law blog. Professor Hassan, welcome to WNYC.
Good morning.
What's your number one concern for Election Day at this point?
Well, I think what everybody's looking at is the possibility of long lines and machine breakdowns. We've seen already a really unprecedented early voting turnout, and if the reports are to be believed about people's enthusiasm and excitement about this race, especially in places where they don't have early voting, there could be very long lines.
And voting rights groups have already filed lawsuits in Virginia and Pennsylvania arguing that they don't have enough backup paper ballots on file. The Virginia chapter of the NAACP, in particular, has argued that the polls are unprepared in areas with large minority populations. So what's the likelihood that there may even be moves made today to change voting procedures or change the rules to ensure more backup ballots?
Well, there's still litigation ongoing. And in the Pennsylvania case, a federal district judge just at the end of last week issued an order requiring that paper ballots be provided if at least half the machines in a precinct break down. The position of the election officials was they'd only provide paper ballots if all the machines had broken down. But the NAACP, I know, is fighting for not only more paper ballots in case of a problem, but also for a reallocation of voting machines, which at this point might just be logistically impossible.
A third of total voters in some states have already cast ballots. It's amazing. In Colorado, some say almost half of all voters will have cast their ballots by the start of the day tomorrow. As I said, this takes pressure off those states on Election Day. But in states that don't have early voting, like Virginia and Pennsylvania, we are expecting to see long lines. I wonder if this may actually, this time around, benefit the Democrats more than the Republicans. If there's so much enthusiasm for Barack Obama, maybe there's going to be a kind of voter fatigue among Republicans who will leave the line saying, it's not going to matter anyway.
Well, that's possible, although, the places where we typically see the long lines are in the big cities with large, poor, and minority populations, and those populations tend to vote for Democrats. So, it may not be that there will be lines in areas where there are more Republicans.
Go ahead.
I was going to point out that when we're looking at these early voting numbers, we're saying, a third or a half of the people have already voted. Sometimes these numbers are comparing to the 2004 turnout. And so if, in fact, turnout goes way up this time, which is what many people are expecting, then even in those places with early voting, we still may see long lines because we don't know exactly how many people are going to turn up. We know that voter registration is at an all-time high, so we could see problems even in places where significant numbers of people have turned out, like Georgia.
How has the early voting experiment gone, in your view?
I think early voting at the precinct is a great thing. It was amazing to me seeing some of the pictures from Florida with people waiting 2, 3, 4, even 5 hours for the early voting. I think it does take the pressure off. It also lets election officials get a sense if there are problems. And it also is much more convenient for voters because this way, if you can't come to the polls on Election Day, you have other opportunities to vote. So I think that's a great thing. I'm not as much of a fan of absentee balloting because of concerns about fraud, but I do think that in-person voting is a great thing.
And some of the stats, just eye-popping, Florida, 3.8 million early voters by the time it closed on Saturday. Colorado, 1.5 million. It's a much smaller state. Georgia, 2 million. California, 3.3 million. North Carolina, close to 3 million. Tennessee, 1.5 million. More than 3 million in Texas. And half of all voters will be using a different kind of voting machine than in the last presidential election. That's another eye-popping stat, Rick Hassan. Half of all people who go to vote in this presidential election will be using some different kind of voting machine than in 2004. That's how much churn there has been since the 2000 debacle. Do you think that bodes well?
Well, no. In the short term, no. Because, you know, anytime, as anyone knows who works in an office, when they roll out the new computers and the new network, there's always that learning curve. And so you never want to be premiering a new system for a presidential election. It's like opening your play straight to Broadway, something you don't want to do. But the reason this happened is, you know, it's no mystery. After 2000, with those terrible punch card machines down in Florida, the federal government came up with a pot of money as part of the Help America Vote Act and told jurisdictions go out and buy new machines. A lot of jurisdictions went out and they bought electronic voting machines, and then in some places, people have lost confidence in them. So in a state like Florida, where they were among the first to junk their old machines and buy these electronic machines, they've now turned around and gotten rid of their electronic machines. So we have places like Palm Beach County on their third voting system in three elections.
And unbelievable.
That's not a recipe for confidence, especially given the track record in the past in some of these places.
Are you expecting a lot of challenges of voters as they go to the polls?
Well, you know, there have been threats of challenges in a number of places. We had this in 2004 as well. You may remember in Ohio, up to the day before the election, there was litigation over whether or not Ohio Republicans could challenge up to 35,000 voters. And the litigation went all the way to the Supreme Court, and Justice Stevens didn't stop the challenges from going forward, but in fact they didn't materialize. So some of what this is you know, I think a way of threatening people that there might be challenges, could deter people because of long lines, and then the challenges don't materialize. So I don't know that we're going to see that much of it. I do think that because of these so-called armies of lawyers, which are essentially lawyers who are poll watchers of both Democrats and Republicans,
right,
mostly in swing states, I think that actually helps things because there will be people there to make sure that all the rules are being followed.
Well, before you go, why is the onus on the political parties to keep the other parties honest when it comes to voting rolls and voter registration? Maybe that's the best way to have it in that adversarial kind of framework, but another way would be to have voter registration left up to a neutral body.
Well, yeah, I'm a big supporter of nonpartisan election administration, and I'd like the federal government to take over running our federal elections, but there's not a lot of political support for that right now. There's actually a lot of resistance. But maybe with all of these problems with ACORN and fears about voter fraud and voter suppression, we could finally move to a nonpartisan model. But short of that, bipartisan is better than one party being in control. And so, you know, it's the second best kind of solution.
Do you think, though, that intimidation is not going to be that much of a problem over the next day? You sounded fairly optimistic that there weren't going to be a lot of picayune challenges of people coming to vote who, you know, have one letter different on their driver's license or whatever it is. But we've been hearing about emails, robocalls, flyers misleading people into thinking that they're supposed to vote on Wednesday if they're from this party, or that they could be arrested at the polls if they have outstanding parking tickets or criminal convictions. This is actually happening in Virginia and Pennsylvania from what I've read.
Well, yeah, you know, this is not new to this election. We've seen these kind of dirty tricks before. But if you're talking about people being removed from the rolls, much of that has already happened. And most of it has been perfectly legal because, you know, the Help America Vote Act requires this kind of matching between databases but then doesn't tell election officials what to do with it. And some election officials are using it as a means to purge voters off the rolls, which requires those voters to cast a provisional ballot. And then the federal law, which requires the provisional ballot, doesn't explain which provisional ballots must be counted. So, you know, there are going to be problems. There are going to be people who are going to show up at the polls who think they're entitled to vote who are going to be told they have to cast a provisional ballot. And I think that's also something that is an unfortunate outcome of us trying to fix the Florida mess from 2000.
Richard Hassan, law professor at Loyola Law School, author of the Election Law blog as well. Thanks a lot for joining us on WNYC.
My pleasure.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, coming up in a minute. Now that there's a calorie posting law for many restaurants in New York City, is it changing your actual eating habits? We're going to open up the phones, 212-433-WNYC. We'll talk more about the elections later, but 212-433-9692. As we take a little break from all that and hear some stories of how people are changing their eating habits and restaurants are changing their menus in New York City as a result of this law. 212-433-WNYC or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. We'll talk to someone from the New York City Health Department about how calorie posting is really making people's eyes bug out in some cases when they see what these things really carry and how it's changing people's behavior. Is it changing yours? 212-433-WNYC.